Great. Great. That'll be fun.
Good for you guys.
What's going on with you all? Anything?
Well, we're getting ready. Our granddaughter's getting married on Memorial Day in Charlotte, North Carolina. So we're going
Now, does she live there?
No, it's halfway between her parents and his parents.
So she's from Chicago.
Yeah, but they live in Detroit. Actually, she and her future husband, they bought a house. They're already living in Chicago, in Detroit.
Okay.
But they're
I all do destination weddings now. My granddaughter is getting married in June in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is really a cool place. I've never been there. Tim and I really would think we might go check out Richard Rohr's place.
Right.
He's in Santa
Yeah.
Fe. But we're going to make it into like a vacation too. We're going to stay
Good.
like
Good
a
for you
week.
guys.
It should be. And he's got a
Hi,
great
Z.
news. Hi, Donna. Lots of creek got me out of the house.
Okay.
She has that kind of power.
Okay.
Where's that?
Oh, now. Okay. Thank you, John.
Yes, Don, thank you. Hey, Don. Hey, Matt. Good morning. I can give everybody a last minute sign in.
Oh, okay.
Jennifer are using the drive to market
why?
Almost ready.
Got the record on.
Yeah.
Action.
Yes,
they could be. Happens at the same time, they might be in Amber.
Okay.
Okay, I think we're going to get started. So we're going to suggest that you take a moment or so just to, first of all, just kind of settle into your space, whether you're here in person or at home. Just sort of soften a little bit. For the next 45 minutes or so, there's nothing else that you need to do, no other place you need to go. And let each one of us, in our own way, open ourselves up as best we can to higher consciousness. Whatever that means to you. And notice that your meaning might change from time to time. We live in a world that is filled with, let's say, the illusion that the lower self is real or defines reality, might be a different way of putting it, that the lower self defines reality, that anger, fear, vengeance, chaos, are just part of the world that we live in, almost inevitable. And then there is higher consciousness that dwells in a state of non-duality, of acceptance, compassion, understanding, love, forgiveness. It doesn't deny all that stuff that's going on underneath. It just says you have a choice this morning to make that your reality or to make your reality something higher. The higher reality does not deny the lower, but it does offer looking at the lower in a different perspective in terms of healing, transformation, release. Lower consciousness cannot conceive of higher consciousness. And that's the edge where you sometimes run into trouble or confusion. The lower self cannot, does not understand higher consciousness. And again, we allow ourselves to open to that understanding as best we can in this moment. No struggle. Openness. Surrender. Willingness. Settling into that space, that spaciousness of higher consciousness that goes beyond definition. The whole theme of this book of innocence is that you have done nothing wrong. In fact, it would say you couldn't do anything wrong. Whatever troubles you in terms of doubt or fear, is simply lower consciousness trying to do the best it can do under limited circumstances. Like a little 3-year-old trying to find its way. We would not be angry at him or her, but we would realize that it is probably seeking answers that are too big for it to comprehend. The comprehension that we seek, the peace that we seek, the forgiveness that we seek, the joyfulness that we seek, the compassion that we seek, is not something that we create. It's something that's already here. In fact, it's always been here. It never left. Like the prodigal son coming home, seeking the Father's love, and coming to the realization that there never was a moment that he was separate from that love. I love you, said Jesus, with an everlasting love. As Paul said in Romans, nothing, absolutely nothing, can separate you from the love of God. This might be a little bit repetitious, but I think it's important to use it as a link between this week and last week. So I'm going to begin our class from Roman numeral page 22, right around the middle of the page where a new paragraph begins. The claim we have taught in prior texts, "Behold, I make all things new," is the claim of the new from the one who is encountered and abides in the upper room. The choice to embody in the upper room is made in agreement with the will, willingness, and the will you hold is primarily utilized by you as the personality commandeers it. That's usually what happens without us thinking about it. We don't do that on purpose. But it goes on to say, when the will is commandeered by the small self, everything that you claim will be in alignment to that self. In other words, we will think that anger, fear, vengeance, getting even, duality are real. The only reality. They are not. When you lift to the upper room, this is the other side of the coin. When you lift to the upper room, I am in the upper room. The choice is made by you to announce the self as fully present. And that is the claim we have taught prior. I have come, I have come, I have come. This announcement in the upper room supports rearticulation or manifestation of the monad, unity, which every aspect of self and persona that you have utilized. In other words, we're not throwing the ego and the personality away. We are looking at it from a higher level of perspective and saying, ah, that's my vehicle. That's my chosen vehicle on this particular lifetime on planet Earth. Might not be able to figure that out right away, but there it is. So it's not something even that's getting in my way unless I let it. It's my teacher and my invented teacher in many ways. This physical body and all the stuff that's going on with it. This personality that I've created that's sort of this I'd like to think of it as a rather attractive persona. Others might not like it at all, because there's certainly some personas floating around here that we don't like at all. The difficulty is that we think that's who they are, but that's not who they are. That's just the clothes they're wearing. That's just the uniform they decided to wear this time around. It's not bad or good, it just is. Here's the key element. The will you see, your willingness, your power of choice. The will you see in an articulated state in higher expression becomes the expression of the divine in form. In other words, it fits that formula we've said so many times before, is I am a unique expression of divine consciousness. And this unique expression of divine consciousness is showing itself in form, this personality, this persona, this ego consciousness, this physical body is the form that it has chosen to take. And instead of being something separate from higher reality, it is actually, again, another metaphor we've used quite often. It turns out to be the lens through which the divine light shines through. So my personality, my ego consciousness, my physical body becomes the lens through which, the unique lens through which the divine light shines through. So you are God as John or Matt or Margot or Don. God as dot, dot, dot. That's always true. But what makes it really true is when we approach that consciously. Say, I am God disguised as Jerry. How did Ram Dass put it? We're all God in drag, he said. That's a great one-liner. I love that one. We're all God in drag. And let me read that last sentence again. The will you see in an articulated state in a higher expression becomes the expression of the divine in form. And because God sees God, God knows God, in all of its creations, the aspect of you that has come will seek to reconcile itself with all things it perceives. All that is in the kingdom will now be known anew. The only things that don't exist in the kingdom are duality, judgment, fear, those limited forms of thinking. You can't take those with you. In higher consciousness, you can observe them as aspects of you that it might be getting in the way. You can see that they're still there. But you're not going to be able to bring them a higher consciousness as being the truth. You can raise, for instance, let's suppose I think there's something going on with my physical body that I don't like, and it's making me afraid. Or I say it's making me afraid. I can, if I want to look at that or deal with that in a way of higher consciousness, I can say, what does that fear have to teach me? What can it tell me about the true self? How can it help me in my relationship with others whom I might be in judgment with? So in higher consciousness, anything can be used as a tool for learning rather than an enemy that needs to be conquered. If only I could get rid of this, everything would be okay. Oh, really? Because you know what's going to happen. Your small self's going to invent something else to deal with. And again, it's not a bad thing. That's just what it does. It's just what it's made to do. Just like the mind is made always to be curious. The thinking mind, the intellect, is never going to be satisfied. There's always going to be something else. E equals mc squared. Okay, what else? And again, that's nothing wrong with that. That's just the way it's made. And because God sees God, God knows God in all of his creations, the aspect of you that has come will seek to reconcile itself with all things it perceives, all that is in the kingdom, and will now be known anew. How can I see this differently, A Course in Miracles asks. Choose once again. Now, when we teach through Paul, we use our language carefully, or as carefully as we can, so that he may trust the transmission and not doubt the merit of the teaching. He is wondering, do we attune our students to this text? Attunement meaning being alignment with something. Best way I have to explain that is the difference between you listening or hearing someone say, I love you, and allowing that to be nice, kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling, or the reality of actually aligning yourself to the energy of being loved, which is a whole different reality. He is wondering, do we attune our students in this text? And indeed we will, as we wish. We are preparing you right now for what innocence is, because most of you have not known it. Most of us grew up in an atmosphere of blame, shame, and guilt, put it mildly. Mostly because our parents grew up in the same kind of atmosphere, on their fault. Generation upon generation upon generation upon generation. It's very interesting that that there's been a change in our language just probably over the past 10 or 15 years or so. And I'm rather kind of consciously aware of that, that for instance, when I was growing up and I did something that was unacceptable, I was a bad boy. That was my parents' way of pointing out that what I did was unacceptable and trying to get the message across, don't do that again. Now, what's happened in the next generation is that instead of saying you're a bad boy or a bad girl, because that's not really what they meant, but that's the only language they had, was saying something to the effect of, I don't like what you did, and you might need to apologize or correct that behavior, but nothing you do can separate from the fact or the truth that I love you unconditionally. Same situation, different language, different comprehension, different way of getting the point across. I don't like what you did. You might need to apologize or do it differently next time around, right? But that does not interfere with the fact or the truth that I love you unconditionally. Wonder what it would have been like if we all grew up in that atmosphere. We are preparing you right now for what innocence is, because most of you have not known it. But you're becoming aware of it right now. You believe it is being unsullied, wearing white to the wedding. The idea of innocence as something a child holds is useful in some ways. But then you believe your innocence is lost, and innocence is never lost, because there is an aspect in each of you that knows God, that expresses and is with God, and that is innocence itself. So much of our theology, so much of our understanding of God, our relationship with God, comes from the myth of the Garden of Eden. Somehow or another, we did something to offend this higher power, And we've been making up for it ever since. And what this is saying, you did nothing wrong. Control is simply a matter of the lower self trying to hold on to guilt or fear or shame, and that is not who you are. Back in the 70s, one of the things I was doing during that lifetime was I was teaching religion at St. X High School here in Louisville. And we had our own kind of, it wasn't teaching morality so much as was learning how to live in a positive way. And there were a lot of little movie production companies that were making these little morality plays that would last maybe for about 10 or 15 minutes, right? That a lot of people teaching living were using. And I remember one of them was Adam and Eve in the garden, or actually Adam and Eve after they got kicked out of the garden. And Eve was played by Carol Burnett. And Walter Matthau played Adam. And they're sitting at a table, and Eve says, "Oh God, I feel so guilty." They're talking about their kids didn't turn out too well. Which they didn't, at least according to the story. And all of a sudden, God appears. And God is played by Edward Asner, right? Who has this powder blue suit and this huge hat. And he comes on the stage like, ta-da! And he looks at Eve and he said, "I didn't invent guilt, you did. I did not invent guilt, you did." Oh. I didn't say you were not innocent. You said that. Innocence is never lost. There's an aspect in each of you that knows God, that expresses as and with God. That is innocence itself. Your alignment with divine consciousness. That is innocence. The ability to be able to accept unconditional love, that's innocence. Try that one on for size sometime. Oh, I'm willing to accept unconditional love, but maybe not quite over there. Unconditional is unconditional. Innocence may be worldly. It may speak a full sentence. It may know the town it lives in, as it demonstrates and expresses fully as you. In other words, it can be expressed in lower consciousness as well as higher. But when you understand that innocence itself is an attribute, an aspect, and an expression of God that seeks reconciliation with you, you will fully understand its meaning. Behold, I make all things new. You didn't do anything wrong, you never did. I have never held you apart from my love. I couldn't. Not only wouldn't I couldn't, because you are a part of me. Holding you in guilt or separation or fear would be like denying an aspect of God, which I cannot do. To be made new is indeed to be reborn. Not as some would have it, a denial of form. In other words, being innocent means getting rid of your body, getting rid of your personality, getting rid of your ego consciousness. Saying it's not that. It's not a denial of form. It's not a denial of history. It's not a denial of who you have been. The true self you see is expressing love and knows itself as love and reclaims every aspect of you in the upper room as of itself. So everything is there. This is my person. Welcome to my world. This is my personality. This is my ego. This is part of my created vehicle here. And I look at it and I praise it and I bless it as being part of my truth. I don't deny it. I don't throw it away. I don't say it's an illusion. Lower consciousness is only an illusion when it denies higher consciousness. Because it can't. Or when it seems like to say to the in effect that I am more, I am better, I am stronger, I am more powerful than higher consciousness is. Which it's not. Behold, I make all things new. I didn't invent guilt, you did.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
So what came to me that last part, and I've been working on this for myself, is that with this being called God or infinite presence, divine love, whatever name I choose to give it, that you know, God isn't holding judgment. He's not taking names and holding that against me. There's that unconditional love that God is all about. And I think what I have been working on, there's cause and there's effect. You know, there's going to be a cause and effect, you know, in terms of if there's something that I do that is maybe one way, there's going to be an effect on the other side. But that has absolutely nothing to do with God. So I have kind of been working on that in terms of, because I think that, you know, I think that sometimes that's kind of, I'm going to be interspersed or connected, like, okay, well, God is punishing me. God is menacing, you know, no, it's not for me. No, it's not, you know, now there may have been an era in terms of what I was thinking, you know, or, and that thinking led to an action that had an effect, but, you know, it's almost like, I don't know. I used to do this when I was teaching. I would tell the kids and says, "Okay, I'm going to write a problem. This is elementary school. I'm going to write on the board 4 + 4 = 8. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. So what if I wrote 4 + 4 = 10? Is that correct? No, it's not. Okay. Well, perhaps what we need to do." Is go back and evaluate what we put into the equation to get 10. Maybe there's something in the middle to get the actual number. We go back and kind of like just do the work within so you can get the 8 as opposed to the 10. So thank you.
So what's next with that, Jim?
Well, what's next with that? Just in terms of, I know I always have the choice to self-correct, to pivot. If I'm not liking or what I'm getting is resonating with me, I can always go back and say, you know what? Perhaps I can, you know, just look at changing that what I was paying attention to or maybe being unaware of.
Okay.
You know, there's this thing in New Thought and Science of Mind, it's, you know, has always kind of been bantered around saying, change your thoughts, change your mind. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
What one of the things that I'm getting with that is, and I just speaking for myself here is, you know, when we speak about higher consciousness or being in the upper room, higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I don't perceive myself as being quite there yet. Mm. In fact, those are the words my mind uses. That's nice. Sounds good. I visited that place a few times, but I'm not quite there yet. Now, what I need to do as soon as I start articulating that limited belief is that I need to become willing to let go of that and to have a higher truth take its place. I don't do that myself. Myself is my lower self, my lower consciousness. What I do is I open myself up and surrender in willingness that limited mindset that I'm in, or the limited mindset that I perceive myself to be in, can be healed, can be transformed again and again and again and again, until there is no point in part of me that says, well, I'm not quite there yet. I am here. I have come. That's what those words mean. I know this. I know the higher consciousness. I know it in my bones. I know I am there in my bones. There is nothing and absolutely nothing that can take that away from me. Here I am. Who was it? Ezekiel, I think it was. Here I am, Lord, send me. I am here.
Jerry.
Yes, John.
So a couple of weeks ago, I read from The Law of Divine Compensation by Marianne Williamson. And it's a short book. I finished it pretty quick. But I highlighted a lot of stuff in there. And since then, I keep going back and rereading just a couple lines several times a day, going through the book again. It, on one level, this is about manifesting wealth, living in the law of attraction. On another level, it is about seeing the world completely differently. And so one of the things, I mean, she continually quotes from the Course in Miracles, A Course in Miracles. And so she, one of the things that has really been on my mind is that only love is real. And with that in mind, some of my anxiety, some of my anger at some of the things that are happening in the world, I've been able to release and pray for perpetrators of certain actions and what have you. It is bringing me peace. What I've found, though, is that I need to go back multiple times a day and just read two lines. And so I set up my alarm on my watch. You know, every hour I go back and I read just one phrase. And I think about that. And, you know, it takes 30 seconds max. And I'm much more calm. I'm thinking much more clearly. But this morning, I don't know why this morning this came to me. I thought about Jesus. And maybe it's because I've been a trainer for most of my life. Jesus was training his disciples. He was talking to them and talking to them and talking to them and giving them stories and demonstrating and what have you. And all of those are best practices in the field of training and learning. And then he made a final demonstration. And the one phrase in the Bible that just always gets to my heart is, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Only love is real. Only love is real. And he knew that he was not going through reality. He knew that he was demonstrating that only love is real. And it would take 3 days, but wow, only love is real. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Every time I think of that, I recall a rather silly little movie by Monty Python called The Life of Brian. And they're following this individual named Brian who's mirroring Jesus, kind of walking through the whole gospel story. And the ending has Jesus crucified, but he's singing a song. And he's singing, always look at the bright side of life. And I remember I thought that was horribly blasphemous when I first saw it. It's horrible. And then the more I sat with it, the more I was listening, John, exactly what you're saying, right? I am teaching you I am teaching you to go to beyond the illusions of the body, even beyond the illusions of pain. I am guiding you through that process until, and Paul finally came to that himself. You know, you can drink poison, you can hold snakes in your hand. It's not going to matter. If you eat, and even if you take away my body to be burned, if you have not love, it's nothing. But if you do, it's everything. How are we doing as far as time goes? Okay, let me, I'll finish part of this paragraph and then we'll do our meditation. Innocence is never lost because there is an aspect in each of you that knows God, that expresses as and with God. That is innocence itself. Innocence may be worldly. It may speak a full sentence. It may know the town it lives in as it demonstrates and expresses fully as you. Innocence as, how are you expressing innocence today? But when you understand that innocence itself is an attribute, an aspect, and an expression of God that seeks reconciliation with you, you will fully understand the meaning. Behold, I make all things new. To be made new is indeed to be reborn, not as someone would have it, a denial of form, a denial of history, denial of who you have been. The true self, you see, is expressing love and knows itself as love and reclaims every aspect of you in the upper room itself. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. Get comfortable in your spot. And close your eyes if you like. I'm wondering what it would be like if each one of us treated ourselves today as being innocent. No guilt, no shame, no judgment. Whatever there is in front of me, I created that to deal with it, to learn from it, stretch with it, to embrace it, to move with it, to reach higher consciousness through it. Being innocent means I am not guilty. I am not in judgment. I am not in fear. I am not in separation. Being innocent means being one with the Father. Being in innocence means there is nothing of importance that can be taken away from me. And in this spaciousness that we have created this morning, I'd like to give you a few moments of silence, of quiet, to allow yourself to discover what innocence is for you, how innocence speaks to your soul. Innocence is also freedom. When I am innocent, when I know I am innocent, there is nothing that is holding me back, nothing that is weighing me down. When I am innocent, I am allowing myself to be loved completely. I am innocent. And so is everyone else that I think about this day, all those who I touch, all those who touch me. Deep breath. And stretch a bit. And open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Jerry.
Hope you have a
Thank
wonderful
Thank you so interview. Much, Jerry.
See you guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Love
John,
you.
John, for contributing.
Thanks,
Thank
Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Love you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
you're
Jerry.
Welcome.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome.